You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die. Talking about Bjork debut in the room. I have Jeremy.
Hey.
Rob.
Hi, guys.
And on the line, I have Ben.
Hello.
And Kyle.
I pronounce it Bjork.
Debut is the international debut studio album by the Icelandic recording artist Bjork, released in July 1993 by One Little Indian and Elektra. It was produced by Bjork and Nellie Hooper, and the genre is alternative, dance, art pop, electronic pop, and house. I'm going to read from the book, Sophie Harris. Bjork showed signs in childhood of the musical maverick she would become. She started out singing alone in windy caves, and by the age of 11 had recorded a hit solo album. Avant-punk groups followed, the most successful of which was the Sugar Cubes. But when the band finally scored an international hit with the song Hit in 1991, Bjork decided to disband the group. Quote, I wanted danger, I wanted threats. Clutching a tape of traditional brass band players performing her childhood compositions, Bjork enlisted the help of dance music pioneer 808 States' Graham Massey and set her course for London's underground club scene. Along with producer Nellie Hooper from Massive Attack, Bjork socialized with some of the most innovative musical forces in town, picking up ideas, sharing, cross-pollinating like a bumblebee. Of course, there were tears and arguments on both sides, says Hooper, but that's how you make a good record. The result was Debut. While Bjork describes the image of herself on the sleeve as shy, polite, Debut was a revelation, a secret that demanded to be shouted, not shunned. At its center is Bjork's extraordinary voice, which swoops from belting howls to soft, baby-like sighs. Debut captures the manic energy and excitement of its genesis, Bjork audibly basking in such sensual hits as Venus as a Boy, when she appeared in 1992's MTV Unplugged, accompanied by a troupe of monks and some perfectly pitched singing wine glasses. It seemed Bjork could charm music from sand. The world applauded, the big time beckoned. Bjork had arrived. All right, what do we think of Bjork debut?
I think I need to see that MTV Unplugged. I haven't seen that one. That sounds awesome.
I did not know about that, but I also didn't realize that Massive Attack and
808 State
808 had anything to do with it, which totally makes sense.
Yeah,
absolutely. Dance classic.
Yeah, I love her. I love her unapologetically since the Sugar Cubes, and this record is amazing.
You know, when someone starts off their career by singing alone in windy caves, like,
that is the most Bjork thing that has ever.
Yeah, of course. That could be the name of her 2023 record. And we don't play it.
I bet it sounded amazing in those with Bjork's voice in all the caverns.
Yeah, I bought this record right when it came out when I was a little dude, when I was like 13, 14.
How'd you hear
and,
about it?
Because MTV played fucking
Venus as a Boy.
No, Human Behavior.
That was the first single.
Or she's riding a teddy bear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Was that Michelle Gondry?
That was Michelle Gondry. Yeah.
The video, video's nuts.
No, that video was sexy and confusing and dangerous to a little freshman guy. I ran out and bought the CD, blasted this every day on my little Discman. Like, I could not get enough of this record. There's more to life than this.
Mm-hmm.
When Bjork like pulls you into the bathroom while you're at a club, and
it's an incredible moment.
I thought that was really cool too.
When did you first hear this record, Ben? Was
this week, dude?
Wow!
Whoa.
Yeah. Oh, dude! Like, I knew the hits. I'd never just sat down with the whole album and all the deep cuts. I wasn't expecting it to be this housey. I think it's cool that it is, you know. But no, yeah, that part in There's More to Life Than This, where she pulls it into the bathroom. It's so cool.
Yeah, I remember like on headphones, like on, you know, back when music fidelity was like a big deal. Just like, ooh, And it was recorded live in the, what was it, the Milk Bar? Mm-hmm. It was recorded in a bathroom at some club. I'm sorry, UK listeners, if I don't. The Milk Bar?
It's the Milk Bar. I think they pronounce it Milk Bar. Okay.
Malk.
It's one of those where they skip half the syllables and just say like the M and the R.
Sorry, ye old Milk Bar. Like there we Worcester. Go.
Let's nip this in the bud. Rob brought up that Post is a better record. Not Post. Yeah, Post.
Yeah, Post.
It's your debut, which I agree with, but this record deserves to be in this fucking book. Like,
I don't disagree with that assertion. It's strange that we aren't getting the follow-up. I'm glad we're getting Vespertine.
Oh, that's what I mean. That
and we're getting Vespertine, Medulla. But not Post?
Are we getting Medulla?
Yeah. We get three.
Are we getting Homogenic?
All right.
No.
Because that's the one.
Well,
I mean, they're all the one.
They're all good.
She never put out a bad record.
So what's so funny about this to me is it's the most basic Bjork album, and it's miles beyond what was coming out at that time.
Oh, 100%.
In like dance music or vocal, anything vaguely mainstream, this rocked my face off when I first heard it.
But I think
when I first saw the video for Human Behavior, I was just like baffled.
Yeah, it's otherworldly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To put a counter argument to that, I think that a lot of times dance music gets dismissed as less
not
artistic.
According to this book.
Well, I was gonna say.
Yeah. But I think there's real validity in, you know, this album because it's incorporating her into this like amazing backing tracks and things like Venus's Boy. Like there's sweeping things that are happening here that, you know, when it gets more experimental, sure, it's more, I think we would find it maybe more interesting, but at the same time, I don't know if that makes it necessarily a better record in some people's idea of the record as a whole.
I mean, you know, art is subjective. Sure. So one Robert's opinion is not that of the entire world. I would say that the reason why she calls this debut and the next one Post is because she had six of these songs already like done.
Mm.
And Post is everything that started after she became a solo artist, which I think is, you know, it's important.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's very true.
Post is a lot more aggressive. They're very, I mean, Army of One.
Army of Me, dude. That fucking.
Army of Me is.
Sickest bass.
That's like the coolest fucking like opener.
But you know who that is? It's Graham Massey.
Cool.
Again.
So. Yeah.
See, she knows how to pick collaborators.
Yep.
Always has. And I mean, what's the one you were saying? The one with.
Nellie Hooper or Michelle Gondry?
No, I'm trying to. Matmos, the album she worked on with Matmos. She's worked with Arca. She's worked with like all these extreme for their genre producers. And she matches or outmatches them every time. She's such a force. It's like I have every one of her albums on wax and it's stupid. Like how good they are, especially like having listened to her from the time I was like, 22?
Mm-hmm.
Till now, and the most recent ones are so dense and almost difficult to listen to for me because it's they're heavy, and this is like the lightest.
This is super accessible,
and Venus is
especially compared to its contemporaries. I mean, it's like dance music with a alternative edge.
Yeah, with Bjork singing,
mm-hmm.
which is great.
Yeah,
I find it really interesting too. There's someone like Someone in Love. I was noticing that. She didn't have the sort of powerful Bjork voice, you know. She plays it really subtly, and even coming in and out of almost a like pitch, like she's slightly off pitch with her. Like I know she can hit the notes, but it has that whisper quiet, and she's playing with these elements that are really cool throughout this.
And
it shows a lot of diversity too.
That song itself is an old jazz standard.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think Sinatra did it.
Yeah.
Speaking of jazz, I love the arrangements and the instrumentation on this. Everything from like the cool timpani in Human Behavior to just that that like the jazz saxophone and like the rhythmic drums. It almost reminds me of like some like later era Moondog arrangements, you know. But I was really into it. I think it's so cool. Her voice is cool. The music is so cool. The arrangements are spot on.
Yeah. Tim Berry as a bass line is fucking cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Charted number two in Iceland. No surprise there.
Number two?
Yeah, yeah.
Who beat Bjork in Iceland?
Iceland.
Maybe
was it the Ya Ya Ding Dong?
Three in the UK and number 61 in the US. Certified gold in Canada, platinum in the US, where it remains Bjork's best selling album.
Really?
Mm hmm.
I would think Poster Homogenic would have.
This one is very endearing, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this was 93. This was on, 120 minutes, constantly a buzz time. What else do they have on MTV late at night?
Oh, the alternative. Nation.
Yeah, you're right, though.
There were the dance ones.
I'm a little surprised that after someone got a taste of this, they weren't like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely buying the next one. But
well, like Jeremy said, her more... her subsequent releases were a little more challenging.
It's true.
They kind of progressively get that way, almost exponentially. I mean, so Post and Homogenic are like pop masterpieces. And then Vespertine is
the greatest love album
ever made. And,
Jeremy,
it just gets weirder and weirder. And Medulla is almost all vocal.
It is.
I think some beats.
There's a gong.
Sourced from like.
Yeah.
And then after that with after Medulla, then you get Volnacura and stuff, and those are just like super dense.
Yeah,
I love them.
Jeremy, do you consider Selma Songs a Bjork studio album?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I have it. It's Bjork. It's for a movie, but she put everything into it.
Yeah.
Have you seen Dancer in the Dark more than once?
No.
once
I saw it at Bear's Place at the Ryder Film Festival too.
Dude.
With Heath and Sybil, I believe, and it was just like
not drunk enough.
I saw that at that Castleton Arts Theater.
Rob, we saw it together, dude.
Jeremy, I saw it at Ryder Films as well.
Crying,
it's one of the only Von Trier's that I would probably watch a second time though. I just haven't like readied myself for it.
Well, did you read about his treatment of Bjork?
Yeah.
It's delightful. Lars Von Trier's piece of shit.
Yeah, he is. Fuck, so Bjork's cool.
If you're listening, fuck you.
It's dancey. It's a sometimes it's not.
I love it. She said, quote, as a music nerd, I just had to follow my heart, and my heart was those beats that were happening in England. And maybe what I'm understanding more and more as I get older is that music like Kate Bush has really influenced me. Brian Eno, acid, electronic beats, labels like Warp.
Oh, yeah. It's weird to hear her talk about influences to me.
Sure.
Because I feel like she's so singular. And I mean, no one's not a product of the art that they absorb and what they listen to and stuff. But she's such a specific thing that like for her to be like, oh, yeah, Kate Bush and Warp. I'm like, I know you listen to Aphex Twin and like Kate Bush, but it's so weird to think about her making a choice in the studio based on someone other than her and her collaborators. You know what I mean? It's just such a weird.
Yeah.
She just seems like this alien life force that makes better art than most people.
I mean, when did she start recording though? I know she was singing alone in windy caves, but
she started recording as a child, right?
Yeah.
She was, I know she was 15 when she joined the Sugar Cubes, I believe. And I think she must have been a little younger when that Glink Glow album came out, which is her sort of, it's wild.
In a great way, though.
Yeah,
there's certain artists where you're just like, oh, you kind of have a singular vision that, sure, people can maybe replicate some of her stylings, but you never get there. You never get all the way there.
I love Scandinavian music. Like, I have several artists that I like a whole bunch, and none of them, they might approach... She's just too out there, and it's like masterful. And apparently she does a lot of her own beats now and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She does have collaborators, but
and she was talking about, I think it was Vespertine and her collaboration with Matt Mos. If it wasn't that one, it was like one or two after. But she was like, everybody kept talking about how great Matt Mos was on that record. And yes, they did stuff, but I also made micro beats and those shits take forever, you know? And I was like, I do that too. It was a collaboration. They didn't make the sound of the album the sound of the album. And I thought that was a really interesting thing. She went on to say something like, I find myself falling into that trap where I'm looking at the record. I'm like, who produced this? You know, when it's a female artist, it's so ingrained that she catches herself doing it too. But I thought that was really interesting that she's like, I did this. Yeah. God damn it. And I believe it. Crazy talented.
I like how this album can just maneuver from house to trip hop to jazz to back again. It's just like, it's cohesive, and it still just flows. Yeah.
It's like stream of consciousness. Yeah. It's like being inside her brain for an hour. This is 93. Like, this is playing on the radio, maybe between like fucking Candlebox, you know, and like
Radiohead or something.
Alice in Chains.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, great stuff. But
trying
to hear...
think of what was like New Order Republic was 92, so maybe in that.
But this got a lot more. I'd argue. I mean, this is anecdotal, I suppose. But I'd argue that this got more airplay in the United States because of the videos and
MTV for sure.
Yeah,
listening to Like Someone in Love right now, which is the jazz standard, and the harp you're hearing is American jazz harpist Corky Hale. I was talking to music students and I was talking to a harpist student and she told me that there's so few harpists that if you play harp, you just know the other harpists.
Oh yeah. I was gonna say it's not Zena Parkins because that's who I thought it.
We should have all became harpists during the pandemic.
Right. Lockdown. Right? We could be like at the top of the game by now.
We already know each other.
We're listening to this harp and there's something about this, you know, harp represents this sort of like fantastical fantasy, right? Like people say it's very dreamlike, but I think that's, you were saying it's very cohesive and I'm getting that too, because Venus is a Boy also has that weird sort of resonant like wow, wow sound in it. Mm-hmm. And then it has the strings in it, like when she's singing the chorus and everything. So there are these elements that she's putting in that make it not just a dance album, right? It has that sort of fantastical elements that she comes back to.
It seems like almost anything can happen in a song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Except maybe an electric guitar. But
all there's that da, 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 in Human Behavior pops up.
You got me.
It's a little more masked.
Credited on the album.
I wonder if she's ever done an acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a B-side called "I Miss You." It sounds like a classical guitar.
It's classical, not like medical strings.
I miss you, metal, but I haven't
medical
met
strings.
You yet.
Yeah. Hey, okay. I love medical strings on my guitar. Metal strings. It's definitely like a plucked.
Yeah.
Whatever those are, I never played classical guitar. I'm not good enough.
Yeah. Resonant guitar, maybe.
Did anyone not shake the little butt to this song?
I'm currently shaking my butt to sensuality. Big Time Sensuality.
Yeah.
Everyone, it's a bop.
Yeah. I think this is something too that she kind of, you're right. With the debut, it's all about the beats. It's all about the just backing house music, right? Mm-hmm. It's very easy going, but.
I mean, this was the summer of Sliver, you know?
Yep. Yeah.
I can't wait till fucking 1994 so if we can stop talking about Sliver.
Was Reservoir Dogs not also 93 or was that 92?
No, that was 92.
Okay.
Yeah. I think
this was my senior year in high school.
Ew.
Gross. You're old.
Was it?
True Romance was 93, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
There we go. But Cuffs was 92.
Wait.
don't bring Cuffs into this podcast.
True Romance should come before Reservoir Dogs, right?
Because well, I thought he sold.
No, he didn't direct it.
But I thought he sold it and used the money to make Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, but Tony Scott didn't make True Romance till 93.
After.
Okay.
And they only like brought his name into it because he had just done a pretty well with Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
I'm going to admit that young Kyle that bumped this album every day on his little Discman always stopped it for the anchor song.
Why?
I mean, I was a little idiot. I was a little dumb dude, you know, like you get to the anchor song. I'm wow, 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 wow. I was like, all right, I'm out.
Start it over.
Yeah.
I'm picturing right now young man Kyle with his Discman just strutting down the street to Big Time Sensuality.
And then the anchor song comes on. I throw my headphones in the trash.
God, all of the hallmarks are there. Like she's got the little like
thing. Yeah, what do you think about that growl?
The sort of crackling. That she love the Bjork growl. Crack her voice.
Yeah,
I love it. I love that because it's like yeah, nobody. It's like does
you've
that.
Never heard anything like that before. It's I don't know.
Yeah,
it's almost alien. I'm
pretty sure she did that on that international hit single that the Sugar Cubes hit? Had. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, I love that mm-hmm. song. That song Birthday? Is so good.
Which song?
Hit.
Oh, yeah.
Where she's running through the woods, which is so great because that song's about being knocked up. And the whole video, she's running away from something in the woods. It's so good. Love it.
Bjork has a handful of running through the woods music videos.
Yeah. I think she might like running through the woods.
So yeah, because that's how you get to the Windy Cave.
It's like her equivalent of The Rock always having to have a movie in the jungle. She's like, no, we're going to run through the woods in this one.
Jeremy, you just blew my mind.
I was looking at the track listing, mm-hmm. and I incorrectly assumed that all of the songs that are credited to Bjork all by her lonesome would have been the six that she brought to the table, but Human Behavior she brought to the table as well. So I guess by the end of this, she had written seven in their entirety.
You mean produce? Because she has her name written on all of them except for five, which is the jazz standard.
Right. What I'm saying is she had six in her head already, like when she came in to do this. One of those was Human Behavior, but then we also have Venus is a Boy, One Day, Aeroplane, Come to Me, and the Anchor Song, which are all credited solely to Bjork. So I don't know what I'm saying.
I don't know either.
Honestly, I'm sad that I started. I'm sad that you noticed that I started and looked at me to cue me like, oh, what was Rob going to say? And really, it was just a load of dog shit.
Jerry Gum's Tom Brilhan wrote, house music didn't quite have critical respect before Bjork came along, and plenty of American writers didn't know what to make of the sound of debut when it came out. I think that's true.
Mm.
I think it when this came out, people are kind of like, who is this young, short Icelandic with the big voice? And then as soon as she started singing, I think a lot of people were just like, oh, this is something else.
Yeah.
I think at first people saw it as almost a novelty, as sure the Sugar Cubes, but saw her performances as the artist. You know, sometimes true artists get this like novelty approach, but then as time goes on, it's like, oh no, this person's just really operating at a very high level of musical talent.
Well, it seems like the US is kind of an outlier. It seems like the global critical reception was actually pretty good, but in the United States, it was kind of mixed.
Yeah.
You got to hear this quote from Entertainment Weekly.
Oh.
Michelle Romero of Entertainment Weekly, 1993. On a few songs, Bjork's breathy mule is a pleasant contrast to the mechanical drone of Sugar Cube-like techno tunes, but most of debut sounds annoyingly like the monotonous linking of a deranged music box. Wind it up if you like. Eventually it'll stop.
What?
What the
fuck?
Entertainment Weekly.
With some shitty snark.
Yeah, they have some of the worst takes in the 90s.
Yeah.
I now want to read what they had to on say your about
household.
Oh my God.
What year did she show up to the Grammys wearing a goose?
That's got to be 95.
It was Dancer in the Dark. That was the Oscars, not the Grammys.
So it would have been like 2000?
Mm-hmm.
2001?
Yep.
I love her fashion choices.
It's still considered
so good.
One of the worst, not by me, but people consider it one of the worst like outfits ever.
She just dresses like a whole movie. It's just like her outfit is a movie.
But it's so insane. It just like blew my mind when people were like, "Oh, such a terrible." And I was like, "It's Bjork." Like,
what
do you guys not understand? I remember who Mad Bjork TV.
Yeah. Mad TV did a whole fucking bit about her dress. Like Mad TV.
Do you guys remember Sam Crawford?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. he right before he moved to New York to do studio stuff and whatnot, he had an interview to be a sound engineer with Bjork. And he went to wherever it was and he met her and she was sitting. She had him meet her in the middle of like a field and she was dressed like a tree. And he did a job interview with this incredible weirdo artist, brilliant, dressed as a tree, and just was like, I just said what I just didn't react.
He didn't get it, did he?
He didn't get it.
Yeah.
Well, he should have shown up dressed like a tree.
A squirrel. Dressed a squirrel. He should have dressed like a squirrel.
Dress for the job you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right now we're listening to the intro of Aeroplane, and this is what was reminding me of like the Moondog type stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This song's so cool though. I like it.
This song's so cool. This is so fun to revisit. I don't think I've listened to this since like the mid 90s.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Not end to end. Yeah.
I got the reissues from the MoMA show she did.
Mm.
So she did a show at MoMA. It had a bunch of her art and stuff too. But one of the things there were all of her albums up to whenever this was, like her six or seven, were reissued and sold exclusively at MoMA. And the ones that didn't sell were sent out to select record stores, like indie record stores across the country, world, whatever. And Landlocked was one of those.
Wow.
So time one came in, because they would like put one out every 3 months and like send them out. Heath would text me and like, we got Homogenic. I'm like, be there after work. Yeah. Like, and then over the course of like a year, I got all of her like first seven on vinyl, and Debut was the final one. I was like, I'm not going to get that one. The shit was selling for like $300 on Discogs.
Wow.
And he's like, hey, we got a copy.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Heck yeah, man.
But it's so cool. But yeah, so I guess the point of that was I recently listened to that like again, because that was probably around 2010, 11.
The story is to make friends with the record store guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And don't wait on that thing, man, because like if you love an artist and you have a chance to get it for like not $100, grab that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed. One dumb fact I have is Human Behavior was nominated for Best Short Music Video, but lost to Peter Gabriel's Steam. And that video was made by Steven Johnson. Steven Johnson, who did most of Peter Gabriel's stuff, but he was also responsible for the Pee-wee's Playhouse, like the entirety of the art decor.
Did he do Sledgehammer?
Yes.
Oh,
and cool. Mixed media, like claymation, stop motion, fucking what, anything you could possibly think of. But he was a genius. He died in 2015. Yeah. There is that documentary, Beauty is Embarrassing, which I highly recommend anybody who likes stuff.
And while we're on the topic of music videos, Gondry did Human Behavior. Gondry went on to do tons of music videos that we all know and love. First one that comes to mind is like the White Stripes Lego video.
Oh, yeah.
What was Gondry? But at the time when Bjork noticed him, he was just making videos for his own French pop band.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was wondering, is Human Behavior, was that his first like major video he did? Is that the one that kind of like got him into be working with all these often indie artists of the 90s that we know and love?
Yeah, it is. And the video for Wee Wee and contracted him. How cool is that?
That's the other cool thing about her is she brings people along.
Yeah.
She finds an artist that maybe not everybody knows. I don't even know if Arca was big when Bjork's, but whatever, it's just cool to find people and be like, work with me. I believe in you.
Except for Sam Crawford.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Hey, Birch, what are we talking about next? Oh, I'm sorry. Positive for me. I love this record.
Yeah.
Positive, oh, yeah.
1,000%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think Post also belongs in here, but I digress.
I would take this, a lot of Bjork.
Yeah. Debut belongs in here, though.
Oh, this sure. Yeah.
Groundbreaking.
No question. No question.
As a groundbreaking as Massive Attack.
Yeah.
Like, as far as like people didn't know that you could mix all these things together and be absolutely this damn good.
Yeah. She's very much planted in the center of it, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, with a different singer, I would kind of, I'd be like, yeah, cool backing tracks, but
oh yeah,
who knows? Sure. Yeah. Who knows what it would be. I also did want to comment, I love the cover, beautiful black and white photo.
It's very enigmatic, yeah.
Yeah, of her with like hands up, with the sort of like fuzzy sweater, and her hair is like slightly disheveled, so it's like mm-hmm. very fuzzy as well. And the photograph is like... The
sweater looks comfortable.
Just, yeah.
And again, her most really normal cover.
Yeah.
Like, and yeah, for sure.
Regular cover.
I love that, though, with Post, because it has that, like, it's very colorful. Yeah, yeah. And like her hair's down.
It's a remix.
Yeah, it's a complete parallel with that. She thinks that things out. It's pretty amazing.
And everyone's subsequent album is like a weirder and weirder.
Yeah, it gets
and
more like progressive. So
the most recent one is like a cutout butterflies robot. Like,
yeah.
It's crazy. I love it.
Amazing. All right, next time we'll be talking about Orbital 2.
The Brown Album.
The Brown Album. All right, thanks, y'all. I seem to walk as though have wings, burn into things like someone in love. Each time I look at you, I'm lit as a glow.